We are finding recovery. What does that look and feel like?
All right, Tyler, before we get...
Welcome to the Real Talk Recovery Podcast with the Therapy Brothers.
We're brothers, we're therapists, and we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Before we get into that, we have a review to read. We love reviews. So this review says amazing and insightful. It says, I have listened to each podcast that you have published as well as the BAE podcast, but your last two resonated with me enough to post a review. I had just listened to quotations miserable in marriage, and it helped me to be the person that I am by putting boundaries in place with my wife. I realized that her insulting me, belittling, shaming, and name-calling were not her fault. It was how she expressed her anger, and it was my fault for letting her do it. Let's see. I do not create a safe place for us as a couple, and I pray that I can continue to hold strength to it. I realize that some betrayed spouses may not like it when we place these boundaries, but they are definitely necessary since we unfaithful are so adept to falling back into our shame. Having said that, I wonder if Emily had listened to that podcast before she came on your show. She reminded me a lot of my wife with the things she said and wanting that connection with her husband. I had to re-listen to it again, and I felt she showed her cards with her little jab at Tyler in the end and can only imagine what her jabs are like with her husband. I really hope that he listens to the Miserable Marriage podcast that was published immediately before Emily's. Anyways, great podcast and keep up the good work. Wow, that's an interesting review.
That is an interesting review. We appreciate that. We appreciate it. There's like three or four layers of feedback there. One is that we're glad you're listening to the show and it's helping you. Yeah. Two, thanks for the feedback on the actual episode itself. And
he's applying things that he's learning.
He's trying to apply some things for sure. And then it sounds like he was, I'm going to interpret it as if he was genuinely concerned for Emily.
Yeah.
And, you know, Emily was a great caller to have on. She definitely brought some things to light, and there was some hard things that we talked about in that episode.
Yeah. I love the specifics of that review and that he's really listening closely and kind of dissecting it a little bit. So thank you so much for sharing. I'm glad you hopped on and actually had your voice heard. So that's why we felt like we needed to read it, was so that your voice could get heard. So thank you so much.
Appreciate you taking the time to do it. Brandon, let's jump in, shall we?
Let's do it.
We've got Rachel here with us. Rachel, thank you so much for your willingness to come on. Why don't you just kind of introduce yourself with any backstory that will be pertinent, and then share whatever questions you've had, and we'll have a discussion.
Well, guys, thanks so much for having me. I believe in recovery with my whole heart. My family is very strong in recovery, and if anything that I've learned through partner betrayal, trauma, and addiction, that there is so much hope out there. And that was the reason that for me coming on, I'm married. I've been married for about 19 years, on and off. We've been separated so many times, so much dysfunction. We were divorced at one point for 3 years. And, I found Al-Anon, he found AA, after he had received 3 DUIs, long time ago. And, since that time, he's really got into AA for the right reasons, not just going to the meetings. And he's really one of those 3%, really digging, really searching. Through that period of time, we had a significant of traumas in our family. In 2017, we had a daughter. I homeschooled, by the way. So I was the majority of the caregiver for my family. I was treated at Al-Anon, but not really, really searching for recovery. Like I had this attitude, like, I got this, like, okay, I understand what a boundary is. I got this, you know, like I got this. And so I really feel like in my own life, my own humility wasn't really there. And I wasn't able to see that. I could only see the environment I was producing for trying to control the nature of another person. I couldn't see me at all. And so in 2017, we had a trauma that happened in our family, which was a really severe accident of our oldest daughter, who at the time was 17, almost 18, and she sustained a traumatic brain injury. At that time, she lost complete memory of her entire family for 2 weeks. And she, because of 18, she refused treatment. She left our home. It was very traumatic. My husband dealt with it my husband and I had just gotten remarried after being divorced. He had made a lot of money in taxes, which he had not filed when we were divorced, and because he was using at the time. And so now he's trying to work off. He's got almost 5 years under his belt, is trying to pay off this insane IRS bill. This accident happens in our family. He's still trying to pay it off, so he's hiding at work. I'm trying to control everything. I didn't know what to do with the medical part, trying to be there with my daughter. At the same time, we have almost 2-year-old, and I think he was almost two. I had to live in a hotel to keep him away, the 2-year-old away from the daughter. They was in an accident because of the intense noise, and she was having problems with just basic skills, headaches, I mean, all that. So we had just live in two different places. It was very stressful in our family. About this time, our middle child, who is now 17, she basically lost her sister, who was one of her best friends. Our 17-year-old daughter decided to like kind of move in and out of the house at the time, not deciding where she wanted to go. She still had significant injury and would not deal with it. We had to tell her, we are not a revolving door. You've got two other siblings that this affects. You are going to have to make a decision what you're going to do. And she decided after moving in and out of our home about 3 or 4 times that she was going to go ahead. And she was displaying very serious behavior that was very alarming. And because she was high functioning as a traumatic brain injury survivor, very high functioning, and she's very beautiful, she immediately went to recreate the pain of her childhood and picked a man basically that she didn't even know and moved into an apartment in a different state. So we had no contact with her. Literally, my youngest child lost his, one of his caregivers, because my daughter watched him. And to proceed to the next tragedy is that our middle child, who lost her sister, began noticing changes with her. And I was, just by the grace of God, cleaning a room I hadn't cleaned out in a while and found 8 suicide letters written by her that I was not meant to find. I was told that she needed to be in a hospital that she was under suicide watch because we didn't have the adequate facilities in our area. I decided to do that myself. My husband and I we watched her around the clock. This led to addiction, and she actually went to 3 different rehabs, and we sent her away because her behaviors were so out of control. And we sent her away to Teen Challenge, which is a actual Christian program in a different state in Indiana. And we sent her there, and we saw they have a very high success rate. She's been home for 1 week. During this time of drama and chaos in our life, but I hope I'm not taking too long. I went into severe untreated, like I wasn't going to my meetings. I was out of control. My husband was just isolating from our family. I mean, we tried to work things out. We tried for about 30 days when my daughter was sick and he couldn't make it. He ended up just acting out with her, and they got in a very big physical altercation. The two of them did. In which I asked him to leave the home, which is here nor there. It's been dealt with and it's over with. But it just was constant chaos. And we raised our now 8-year-old boy in that environment. And now there was an affair. There's been always porn and acting out our entire marriage. I always attributed to it that it was the alcoholism. I never thought that it would be a different problem. In October of last year, actually about 2 years ago, my husband revealed to me, or I found out, that he was having an affair with an ex-girlfriend. And I lost my mind. Like, I had never even taken a breath to deal with anything. I went into a horrible depression, all the symptoms and the signs and all the things. I turned my back on God. I wanted nothing to do with him. I just kept going to Al-Anon meetings and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And I went to a conference for betrayed wives in October in Colorado Springs. And I found there was many women like me, which led me to Al-Anon. And once I got into Al-Anon, it was my lifesaver. I had divorce papers in my hand already. I mean, I was all done. He couldn't figure out what he wanted to do in his life. There, you know, just all this chaos. And when I got into Al-Anon, I really began to see what part of the problem I was. I saw that I really believed that sex was the most important sign of love. I really believed that I was the Al-Anon problem. I saw my part in my marriage. And I started going to 8 or 9 meetings a week. I've got a sponsor. I've been working the steps. During that time, I've really just been shown what my part is, how I disrespected my husband, how I disrespected my family, how I was constantly critical. I mean, my part, it just broke my heart. And my prayer was that God would show me my part. And I will tell you, I started a journal, just the miracles that have happened. My husband is in recovery now. He's still continuing his AA meetings. He's just doing amazing. He's starting a lot of ACA work. He's just becoming, the changes in him are incredible. He's not working the program I want him to do. He's not, you know, doing what I want him to do, but the amazing things that are happening in our family are beautiful. As soon as I found out about my problem, I went to him and I am really learning intimacy skills and how to respect him. I've gone to my daughters and made amends to them. And on February 25th, he wasn't even speaking to me. We were in separate bedrooms. Last week, I actually moved back into our bedroom. We are connecting. He is wanting our marriage to work. I mean, it's just, I know this isn't the place and time to talk about all the miracles, but it's just, I hope you can hear from my voice how grateful and how many miracles have happened. And so that's the message I want to carry today.
Tyler, do you want to start? Do you want me to start?
Sure. First, I just want to say, Rachel, it sounds like you and your family have been through hell and back together. And it's just probably a testament right off the bat that you're here even on this call sharing the things that you are sharing, that that's a lot for an individual and a family to carry. So that's indefinitely had to have been a pretty rocky process to even be in the spot where you're at right now. And I know it's probably not over
yet. Thank you.
I want to know Rachel a little bit. You've given us quite a bit of backstory and you've shared a few miracle things, but I'm wondering, like, you're experiencing a shift right now, Rachel, and I want to know, like, what are the things that have been most, like, the things inside of your control that have been most pivotal towards the changes that you're starting to experience?
I was not able to see my husband as a good person. I completely lost that. When I found addiction with the alcoholism, everything, I felt like I was better than him. I knew more than him. And it was my job to mother him, you know, to show him the better way. Like, I knew the better way. And, you know, he was never able to win in our home. I was doing all of that for him. I was telling him what he was doing wrong, what he could do right. I never saw how tight of a grip I had on people and not just him, but other things in my home, because I could not let go of my own fear. And I had such contempt for him, and I couldn't see him as a sick person. All I could see him as a bad person. And I was out to change him.
So I love what you're saying, Rachel. I love the accountability and just what you're talking about, what's in your control and what was in your control to shift. But I could actually see this being triggering for some people, where it's like you went to Essanon and you were told all of the things that you should change in order for this to get better. I want to just talk about what is Essanon. So could you just speak to that, Rachel? I know what Essanon is, but for anybody listening, could you just kind of describe what Essanon is?
Yeah. So Essanon is the Anon program, just like Al-Anon is the Anon program for AA. Essanon is the Anon program for Sex Addicts Anonymous. Yeah. And,
So it's for the partners of the sex addicts.
Yes.
And to help, and it walks you through a 12-step process, healing process, that's for the partner. And it can be really powerful and really, really good. Rachel, there's two things going on. One, him cheating on you, that's not your fault. You realize that?
Yes.
So that can exist. Him cheating on you is not your fault. And there was work for you to do. Correct? On you.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So both those things are true at the same time. And I love what you're saying in seeing the fear that was present in your relationship with your husband and facing that fear that you had that was leading to control and all kinds of things. Was that hard?
How did you come to let go of some of that control? How did you come to those conclusions?
I made a choice. I went to him. I've never been ever very meek and very humble with him. And the first thing to get my heart in that position, because my heart wasn't in that position. And I started to make a gratitude list. I added to it every day. Every time I was like a detective trying to find things about him that were just amazing. And before I knew it, I would say that gratitude list of my husband and of the things that God had already done, my higher power, God, in my life already. And I began to make those lists of gratitude and say those every day in the mirror. And what you focus on is what you get. And I was like, the more I focused on the gift that my husband was, despite what he'd done, he'd said he was sorry, but sorry was never good enough for me. He owed me something. And that is what my behavior, I have to believe my behavior also, not just his, mine. And so when I began to say those gratitudes and being able to come from a different place, I was able to begin complimenting him every single day. And when I became, he didn't respond right away. He didn't want anything to do with me. I don't blame him. I'd rejected him. I'd hurt him. I disrespected him. I'd lied to him. And I also was untrustworthy. I showed up in my relationship in a different way, the same way, because I wouldn't look at it. And I went to my husband in a spirit of meekness and kindness, and I told him, and this is exactly what I said, because I had to memorize a speech with my sponsor, and this is exactly what I said. I said to him that you are never able to win at home, ever. And I don't ever want you to see the judgment that you saw from me again. And I need to know how I can support you. I need to know where I can stand beside you and what you need from me. And then I told him that, I trust, I'm putting my trust in you. And I am choosing to put my trust in you, is what I told him. And I said, I trust that you are doing everything. Hold on just a second, excuse me. That I told him that I trust that you are for our family, that you are for us, and that the decisions you are making are for us. And I am trusting that you are taking care of, and I named the three sexual things that were going on. I said, I'm trusting that you're taking care of that. And I also, at the same time, handed him an envelope with money, because that day I went to my bank, and I've always kept a secret bank account. And I handed him the money and I said, I don't want to be separate from you. I don't want to be separate from you anymore. But I handed him the money of the secret account. And he just stared at me. And then the second thing that I did, as I was at my daughter's, her graduation from Teen Challenge, actually a week ago, is I affirmed my husband in front of a crowd of about 150 people. They gave me the microphone, and the parents had to go up there for graduation and talk about it. And I affirmed him in front of all those people, and I wanted my daughter to be able to hear my part. And it was about 150 people right around there, 100, 150, somewhere around there. And he was pretty much speechless, like, things began to change. And so that's what I did.
Okay. So, So I've got a question that's, I know that some of our listeners are going to be having, and I have it myself, is everything you just said has elements of what, of certain principles in recovery that we want, which is that there's forgiveness, there's accountability, there's grace, there's gratitude. How do you balance all of those things that you've found with also still having healthy boundaries to prevent yourself from potentially being hurt or walked on or have your own values stepped on?
Okay, that's actually a beautiful point, Tyler, because codependency can be really tricky. And codependency is where, you know, you're like an open whatever, and your drug is another person, place, or thing. So my drug was my husband and controlling all that stuff. And so what's significantly different here is that I'm operating from a place of what I want. What do I need? It's not a place. It doesn't matter if he's in my life or if he marries another person or if he has another affair or he does whatever. I mean, obviously those things matter, but that's not going to change the standard I'm setting for myself. And what my standard for myself that I do now differently is that I start my day out with, what are the things that Rachel desires? I am responsible for my own happiness. I'm responsible to be my own hero. And I never took that responsibility before. And so it doesn't matter if another person wants me or doesn't want me. I mean, it does. I mean, it would be sad, but that's not what I'm based on. Because, and here's another example. If my husband says, Rachel, I want to spend more time with you, or I want to do more things with you, if I haven't had the time for me that I need, if I haven't had the time to start my day out the way I need to start it out the next day, and I haven't done the things that I need to do to take care of myself, because I never knew that self-care and recovery were two different things. I used to put recovery in one big lump and say, my meetings, my sponsors, my steps, my stuff, you know, and working that every day, but that was all of it. It's not. My self-care are the things that make me happy, that give me pleasure and joy while I'm doing them. Not so much after I'm doing them, but as I'm doing them. Like for me, my going on my golf cart rides, you know, spending my time with worship music, talking to other people, connecting with others. Those are the things that bring me joy. And I have a whole list of those things. And I do three of those things every day.
I want to go on some golf cart rides. That sounds great. So a quick little story just to kind of illustrate what you're talking about, Rachel. And Tyler's question is a great question too. So about 3 years ago, I think, I did a post on Instagram. And the post was basically the gist of it was, hey, instead of having hatred for your partner, try to shift to positive regard and some grace and love for your partner. And I made that post, and you could imagine the response I got. The response I got was, and they took it pretty far too. You're teaching women how to get hurt and betrayed even more. You're promoting basically this behavior that's permissive and non-boundaried. And I felt really misunderstood, because what I was saying was it was more for them than it was about their partner. And the fact of the matter is you absolutely have to be boundaried and have to love yourself and take care of yourself and do those dailies that you're talking about, Rachel, in order to really allow yourself to see that other person through a lens of love. And when you are boundaried in that way, and when I say boundaried, well, I'm not talking about the old Rachel that was controlling and unhealthy. I'm talking about an empowered individual who can now see your partner's pain. Why has he done what he's done? Why has he been there, right? You can see that now, Rachel. And that's the miracle that's happened, is you're approaching him with love now, but you're starting with approaching yourself with love first, so that you can do that with him. Is that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Rachel.
Absolutely.
But
like, there's been some things that have come up, because I know that it can take up to 2 years for him to feel any sorrow, or like he can say to me, I'm sorry for these things, but he can't have the empathy I need for about 2 years that he's done this. And I understand that. And I'm understanding that. But here's the thing. There's the thing that's happened to me. My heart has been so broken for my part, for what I took from him. Because control, how I see it, is a form of theft. Is I'm taking another person's choices and I'm manipulating their feelings to do something I want because of my sickness, of having to. That obsession of the mind.
But Rachel, will you play along with me here a little bit? I want to say you did that for good reason. He was addicted. He was lying to you. He was cheating on you. Of course you were showing up in control. You had to. It's all his fault.
Uh-huh. The beautiful part of this is, Brian, is that I can't, like, there are some things that come up with triggers for me, but they're not like I choose. I have to stop and walk away. Like, I don't force solutions. I can stop and walk away, and I can say to him, if he wants me to do something and I don't feel like I can do it, I just say I can't. I don't explain myself 90,000 times. I just say I can't do that right now, and I walk away. And if he doesn't understand me, that's not my problem. Mm-hmm. I can't do something. I can't do it. And I can say it in love and caring and nicely, but I don't owe 90 explanations on why I can't commit to something that I can't do. It's I can't do it. Period. And I haven't really had to do that much. I have a couple times because I'm new. It's like learning a new language. And so I don't know. I don't want to do the wrong thing. I don't want to show up in my own behaviors. But at the same time, I just don't know. And when I just don't know, I have to just kind of detach with love from that situation and say, I can't do this right now. It's not you. And when I do that, I put a self, I make a face statement. I said, you are such a trustworthy person and you are worth committing to. And I need to step away from a minute. Or so I'll say something that I don't quite see the whole thing of it yet. And so I just speak to it like it's already happening. And I take my time away. So shame has no power in our home. So the cycle of addiction, I don't play a part of that.
Okay, just to reemphasize this, the principle that you're getting at here is that you're checked in with yourself enough to know what you're capable of and what your values are, and you're acting from a place of your values, so that when you go to your husband and offer those things of grace and gratitude and acceptance, you're doing it from a place that also knows who you are and what you're choosing. And now you can own the consequences of those choices, even if it means, let's say your husband goes off the deep end tonight and goes on a bender and gets raging drunk and there's a physical altercation. You now get to own your choices of however you're going to respond to that, because you know who you are and you know what your values are.
Absolutely.
I think you could have good reason to play the victim to God in your life. You know, kind of like Job, like we could look at everything that's happened in your family. And I think most people could sit back and say, yeah, she has a right to be pissed at God. She has a right to be hopeless and angry and frustrated. And But you don't sound that way. And I'm going to tie this back to the principle that we've been talking about. And it's a hard thing to hear for some people. And Viktor Frankl is a great example of this, is no matter what happens to you in your life, you have the power and ability to choose how you respond to that on an emotional, spiritual level. And so you, Rachel, you have the ability to respond to your husband with love if that's what you choose to do. And the shift that I'm hearing that you made was you were responding with fear, resentment, and shame before, and now you're realizing I can actually try to figure out how to respond with love and be boundaried at the same time. That's within you, regardless of what he does or regardless of these circumstances. And it's the same thing with what's happened with your family and responding to God.
Yes.
Right? So that's maintaining your power.
And I feel light and free. Never felt that in my life before.
Yeah. Yeah. In so doing, it can feel like, for somebody who's stuck in that like I want to be angry victim place, it bothers them to hear this, because it's like in my moment of pain and in my moment of suffering, you're kind of blaming me for keeping myself stuck here, and so it's just hard. Yes. To hear, right? And really, that's not what I don't think any of us are saying. We're not saying that. We're not blaming you for staying stuck there. I totally get why you'd stay stuck there. But what we are saying is that we believe that you can find healing. We know that you can step out of this hard spot that you're in if you're feeling stuck, and you have the power to step beyond this. And Rachel, you're a good example of this.
I think, Brandon, what you're getting at here is that oftentimes in a situation like this, whether it's towards God or your partner or anybody else, it's legitimate that you've been through hell. And it's legitimate that a lot of what you've been through isn't your fault. And it's easy to get stuck in the place of needing justice, because we as human beings, we believe in justice. And yet we... Right. If we get stuck in the place of needing justice in order to be better, we might be waiting for a very long time, and we might be suffering longer than we need to, unless we're able to give the need for justice over to something or somebody bigger than ourselves and allow ourselves to continue to move forward with the choice that we were gifted with when we came to this world. And what it sounds like is that you've tapped into the principle of choice and agency above all else, which has allowed you to, in some ways, at least for the time being, transcend the need for justice. That justice will come in some way, in some fashion, but you don't have to be the judge and the jury anymore. You have a life that you have to get busy living for yourself.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Rachel, I want to ask you something, kind of going along with what Tyler just said. And this isn't a fun question, but I want to hear what you have to say. Let's say you go home today and your husband says, "Hey, I've cheated on you again. I started another affair, by the way, I'm telling you this because I'm totally drunk right now." How do you respond to that?
Well, first thing is that my response to that situation would be, of course, hurt. But I don't have to react to that person. I have to respond to a sick person. But at the same time, I won't tolerate that in my life anymore. And so I would ask him to respectively please leave our home. And I would allow myself, because I'm in Essanon, it tells me that they suggest 12 months before I make any major decisions in my life. And so that wouldn't change for me. That's what I'm committed to, is 12 months. Nice. I wouldn't restart my time. I'm committed to 12 months, and it hasn't been 12 months yet. But at the same time, I will not live in a home with someone that offends our children, that brings that into our home. And I would say, I can't have you here. I love you and I care for you. And if I know the relationship with my God that I've developed is that he would minister peace and hope to my heart and to my family, And how I respond is how my children would respond. And so because of my actions and faith toward myself and toward my higher power, I believe that there could be peace in my home. I could be able to be free from obsession. I could be able to be free from control. And I would know the next thing to do when I need to know it, because I was being obedient to the thing right in front of me.
That's a beautiful answer, Rachel. That right there is a interdependent, healthily attached answer. I can maintain the love toward him, but I can be boundaried. Now you saying I don't tolerate this, that's not being controlling. That's being honest with him about who you are in that relationship and what works for you and what doesn't work for you. That's different than the obsessive, controlling, fearful Rachel.
I feel at this point where I am today, I would be relieved of snooping, because when I snoop in any way, fashion, or form, when I snoop, I'm saying he lied to me. I'm lying to him. When I say I trust you, that you have our family's best interest at heart, then if I don't fulfill that promise, I'm lying to me, and I'm not going to do that. Yeah. And so, like within reference to what you just said, is that I can have full faith and confidence that my higher power will show me what I need to do and the next action to take when I need to take it.
I love it, Rachel. I hear that you've wrestled for quite some time and you're starting to land now. It's funny because you probably had the principles we're talking about, you've probably had them spoken to you 1,000 times over the last 5 years, and in your head thought, oh yeah, that's interesting, or oh, I don't know if I agree with that. But it was only until recently that your heart started to catch up and go, oh, I understand what this actually means now. How did you get your heart to connect to everything that you'd heard for 5+ years?
I saw me, and it was very ugly. And I was actually in the hospital with my kidneys were shutting down. My daughter was acting out in her pain, the one that just came home, and my kidneys were shutting down. And I was like, what in the world? Like, I have done everything I thought I was supposed to do. And I couldn't do any more things. And I was at the end of myself. And my higher power, who I call God, came into my hospital room in a form of different movies and different visitors. And it was able to carry the message to me that, Rachel, it's time to get to work on the things that really matter. Time to get rid of this ugliness in your heart. And I wasn't able to do anything about it at the time because I had to, you know, be there for my daughter. My husband was hiding. I mean, it was crazy. And when that affair happened, it's been the best, most beautiful gift that's ever happened to me, because it brought upon me a pain that I've never known. And it brought upon me a mirror of myself that I've never been willing to look at. And when I looked in that mirror and took the advice of complete strangers that have walked a path before me and started doing the work, I was relieved of the bondage of self. The third step prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous is one of my most favorite prayers. And it says, and there's a line, it says, relieve me of the bondage of self. And that's the freedom that I'm experiencing. Is that it's not, my happiness is not dependent upon another person. It's dependent upon my choices and what I believed and decide to focus on. And a byproduct of that choice is intimate relationship with self, with God, and with others, including an infallible, a fallible person like my husband, who I am also fallible. And to be able to see him with eyes of love and respect and beautifulness and have appreciation and be able to lay in his arms and look in his eyes and receive everything that I was meant to receive is the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced in my life, ever.
That's awesome, Rachel. Thank you so much for sharing your heart the way that you're sharing it and your story the way you've shared it today.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. Rachel, I really appreciate the backdrop that you've given us of recovery, of shifting into recovery. So really appreciate you coming on today.
All right, you guys. Again, Rachel, thanks again. For those of you who are listening, if you've got questions or concerns or comments, reach out. We'd love to hear your comments and thoughts on this. And we really appreciate you coming on and sharing today, Rachel. Thanks a million.